I've thought long and hard about how much I say or tell or share in this week's episode. And then I kind of thought, well, I won't share any of it. But I know what I will share with you all today is something that many of you may have experienced or may be experiencing, and not in exactly the same way or in exactly the same situation. But I do know I've got clients, I've got course participants, I've got friends, I've got family. Many of you have commented on my LinkedIn feed to say that you are or have experienced the same thing. And I think I want to link everything that I'm about to share with you in today's episode back to moral injury and what it can look like to feel so utterly exhausted and pissed off and, I suppose, in some ways numb from constantly feeling like you have to fight systems and processes and broken departments and broken systems and healthcare systems and just all of that crap. Because this is happening even more for many of us, right? And I think many of us that are just bloody exhausted and or on the brink of burnout and or coming through the other side, like the parts that we can control, right? The parts of ourselves that we can control, our feelings, our thoughts, our emotions, our actions, those parts, we could probably get a handle on quite quickly, right? We do know what to do. Sometimes it's hard. Sometimes we do need therapists. Sometimes we do need coaches. We need a community of people around us sometimes to lift us up and hold space for us and pay attention. And at the same time, it can be still so hard to almost drag ourselves through that space, right? When everything that could and should support us is broken. Because then what do you do about it? Do we just accept it's broken? Or how do we kind of work it? So today, as always, unscripted, unedited, unapologetic. I can't promise that I'm not going to cry today. I've been doing a lot of that over the last week. So as I share this, as I said, you may be feeling it. I don't know what may or may not come up for me, but I'll talk to you a little bit about maybe last week and some of the anger, I think, is what I need to say to you. I feel angry. And that anger, any anger, can lead to exhaustion, right? And can lead to us feeling frazzled. And I thought I'd kind of got to a place where I'd let go of some of that anger and I'd processed it in a different way. And then something else happened and that made me even more angry. And I just feel angry. So should we talk about that today? And why? So if you've been here for a while, you will know that last year I was really struggling with my own health. And I kept having to really fight the NHS to be seen and heard. If you're not in the UK and familiar with the NHS, our healthcare system, basically, right? Our National Health Service, that actually doesn't feel at all like a health service at the moment. So I'd been battling to be heard by doctors. I had been battling really to just be seen and heard as a human being. I was being rushed into and admitted to accident and emergency because pain and bleeding was just becoming so absolutely unbearable. Morphine wasn't even touching it. And I'd go to A&E, I'd have conversations with doctors, I'd sit in front of consultants, and there was just, for so many of them, like, just a blankness, right? I remember seeing some doctors and some registrars and some consultants, and literally they're sat in front of me like shrugging their shoulders, like, yeah, we know it's broken, yeah, we know you need surgery, and there's already 100 women on a wait list, like, what do you want us to do about it? And this happens with burnout, doesn't it? It's happening in organizations everywhere at the moment, this complacency, almost like apathy, right? Like, yeah, it's broken, but what do you want me to do about it? And we've seen this rise continually since 2020. I don't know of one organization right now where all of their people just feel like energized and ready to go. And I think even a lot of organizations that are out there flying the flag and saying what they're doing to look after their people, and we're so amazing, and this is what we're doing brilliantly, I'm still seeing and hearing, right, from some of those big organizations, people just like, yeah, it's not, you can't believe that, right? That's what it looks like on social media. Let me tell you what it really looks like inside. And I continue to hear and see stories of people like almost having to fight for basic answers and fight for basic benefits and basic foundations. And it's harming people. It's hurting people. It's doing so much harm and so much damage to so many people, right? And that's organizations everywhere at the moment. And then I think we've got to, you know, we look around at so-called leaders and government and all the crap that's going on there. And that feels exhausting too, right? And the rising costs feel exhausting and life feels exhausting. And last week, I had a bit of a cry on Monday. I'd opened my emails. I delivered the master burnout training in the afternoon. We had a great session last Monday. I was just sorting out the recording, kind of getting ready to send that over to get sent out to everybody. And I got this email. It's like, congratulations, you've been awarded a London Marathon place 2027. I have to read it again. Like, what? And I've got a London 2027 marathon place. And I sat down a bit of a cry, and for a few reasons. The place that I've been awarded is a charity place. It's for Pancreatic Cancer UK, a charity that supported my late friend Joe through pancreatic cancer. And over the years, we've raised lots of money for that charity and another pancreatic cancer charity in memory of Joe. So there was a bit of a cry for that, right? I'm like, holy crap, I'm going to do this, right? I'm doing this for Joe. There was also a bit of crying because I'd completely forgotten that I'd applied. You've probably had those moments, right, where you watch something on TV and you think, oh, I could do that. Maybe you've applied for, I don't know, a quiz show, right? You've said, oh, that looks really easy. I could do that. Maybe you've applied for a London Marathon place because it was London Marathon weekend. And the bit that you caught on TV, you saw somebody running in a vest for a charity that made you think of a loved one. And you thought, oh, I'll just have a look on their website and see if they're taking on any applications. And that's exactly what I did. Like, I remember it now, but this email came and I thought, I was so over. I hadn't been sat thinking, I wonder if I've got a place, because I completely forgotten I bloody applied. So I kind of had that on Monday and had a bit of a cry and thought, do you know, if I'm doing it, right, it's like my friend Joe, would absolutely, she'd have laughed at me, first of all. Like, do you know what you've just let yourself in for? So she'd have absolutely pissed herself laughing. And then she would have given me every ounce of support that I needed to get through the training. And she'd have been there on race day with pom-poms and laughter. And she'd have been cheering me along the way. And she'd have been absolutely waiting for me at the finish line. And I know that she will still be doing that. I've also had similar messages from her daughter, right? And her daughter has said, I'm going to be there cheering you on the sidelines. Mum would absolutely have been there with pom-poms. So I kind of started the week a little bit emotional. Then I got practical, right? Then I got practical. What's my training need to look like? I've got 44 weeks and 41 weeks, I keep saying. 44. Anyway, I've got 40-something weeks. I need to double check that. I keep saying 44 and now I'm thinking, is it 41? Anyway, I've got a training plan all laid out. I've got my schedule. I'm ready to go. I've started a YouTube channel to kind of record my progress. And if we get enough subscribers, definitely haven't got enough at the minute, but if we get enough subscribers and we get enough likes and we get enough shares, then potentially there's an option that we can get some ad revenue coming through for that. And all that could go in the fundraising pot as well. So I do my first video on Tuesday. I go into my PT session. I go on my first training run on Wednesday. I've been on training runs since. But I sit there on Wednesday, and on Wednesday I'm feeling quite good. And on the Tuesday, my mum had rang me to say that she'd chased my dad's op, my dad's results rather. A few weeks ago, well, four weeks ago, my dad had to go for a procedure and a biopsy. And he'd been put on in the UK again, we have what's called a 2-week pathway. So if there's any suspicion of any kind of cancer, they do now what they call this 2-week pathway. And so, like, you have to be seen and have tests and whatever done within these 2 weeks. And that 2-week process had started like 5 months ago, and everything was just taking longer and longer and longer. And even when they kind of said about the biopsy, I mean, I've had biopsies taken before. I've had some urgent ones taken, and I've also had a let's just double check just in case. And after this biopsy, my dad was told, like, well, you'll get the results within 2 weeks. It was 3 weeks, and my mum said, what did we? I said, just ring, like, ring and find out. So my mum had rang, and she was told, oh, we discussed your husband this morning. We've got an appointment for 3 weeks' time. So, of course, my mum messages me back. I said, well, like, don't worry, like, if it's not an urgent appointment, like, it'd be absolutely fine, right? Whatever it is, I'll kind of follow up in a few weeks. Maybe just want to talk about his results and whatever. Maybe there is something there that he needs, but it can't be cancer, because, like, this process has been taking months, right? So let's be optimistic. Let's look on the bright side and think more positively. And my mum messaged me, it's the worries really making me out. I said, well, ring again tomorrow then and say, can you just give us the answer over the phone, cancer or not cancer? And then we'll have this appointment in 3 weeks. So mum rang up again. Said she wanted an answer, explained that it was making her ill. She lives with a whole ton of health stuff. And then give her an appointment for that afternoon to go and see the consultant. And that appointment has confirmed that my dad has advanced cancer. And I think that hearing that, I broke down in tears immediately on the phone to my mum. But I almost kind of think, and obviously I can't quantify any of this because there's too many what ifs. But I almost think it would be so much easier if the process had been quicker to come to terms with that diagnosis. But to keep somebody waiting for almost 5 months, and the fact that somebody sat in a meeting on Tuesday and discussed my dad and saw that it was advanced cancer and still thought, this guy can wait another 3 weeks before we tell him. That would have been 6 weeks from his biopsy. To then bring him into a room and to say, sorry to tell you, but yeah, it is. And I can't get my head around that. And I can't let go of the anger that is sitting in that decision inside a really bloody broken system. Somebody made a decision to say 3 weeks' time is okay. And in the meantime, we're not going to tell him anything. Right? So it's a 6 week wait from a biopsy to being told, yes, you have cancer. And I can't even fathom that that is healthcare. But I'd taken the Wednesday, I cried all day Wednesday from kind of getting that news. And I cried a lot of Thursday. There was a lot of emotion and a lot of anger and a lot of tears. And then we got news to say my dad had an MRI scan. But so basically what I've been told is it's advanced cancer. We don't know how advanced it is until he's had an MRI and a CT. Then he's going to be referred to a specialist hospital. And then we'll start talking treatment. So we're getting almost immediate date through for an MRI for Friday and for a CT scan for Sunday. So you think, right, finally now it's going really, really quickly. So I pick my parents up on Friday, take them for lunch, and then we're going to go for this MRI. And we've got maybe half an hour between, like, we go for a coffee when we get to the hospital. Then we go early because last time I took my dad for a pre-op, they saw him really quickly. So we think, oh, let's chance it, right? If not, at least there's aircon. Bloody baking on Friday. Sweating everywhere we went. So at least we can, at least there's aircon. Let's go sit. So sit in the waiting room. My dad gets called through immediately. And I'm like, see, this is positive, isn't it? And then my dad comes straight back out again. Because what nobody had noticed when they gave him the date for the appointment so quickly was that the consultant had written on the notes that my dad wasn't to have the MRI until after the 17th, which is this Friday coming. And I double checked when we then left that actually his CT scan would go ahead on the Sunday. And again, I can't understand if there was an appointment available, if you get told you've got advanced cancer and you desperately need an MRI and a CT to decide on the severity of that cancer, an appointment comes through for 2 and 4 days after you've been given that diagnosis and you rock up, bearing in mind there will be worry and anxiety and stress and panic anyway, where you then turn up for your appointment to be told there's a note on the system, we don't know why, but we can't do it for at least another week. And the only thing I can get my head around is that it's down to budget. Now, I don't know if that's going to be right. My mum's rang again this morning. My dad's got a CT for this coming Saturday. But I can't understand, again, how somebody looks at that and says, it's okay to wait a week. And I don't know if it's okay to wait a week because he's over 80 and let's give the care to somebody younger, somebody who might need it a bit more. I can't decide and I don't know if it's down to budgets or not. But I just feel angry because a 2 week fast track has taken 5 months. My dad would have had to wait 6 weeks to get an answer to be told, yes, you do. And then when he's told we need to hurry everything along because he needs to see a specialist, that's delayed by a week as well. And with the people that I've spoken to, if people keep saying to me, well, yeah, but, you know, it's not the people, right? All of the people mean well. All of the people are really nice. All of the people are really lovely. It's just that the system is broken. And I wonder how many organisations are saying that right now. Because there are a lot of broken systems. But ultimately, behind all of that are people. Because the people make the systems happen. Somebody sat there and decided, knowing that there were other appointments available, a person decided it was okay to make somebody wait for 6 weeks. A person didn't read the notes that said after the 17th. A person decided that an MRI 48 hours after a diagnosis could wait an extra week. That's people making decisions. And the people making these decisions in the broken systems, particularly when we look at healthcare, they're messing with people's lives. Now, my dad, I love my dad. And I remember when I spoke to him on Wednesday, and he's like, Kelly, it's not like I'm in my 20s or 30s, right? I'm 80. And just the way that he's speaking and the way that he's thinking, and like he sat and finished his funeral plan off on Saturday morning. And I wonder first, like, whether we get to an age or whether there is a level of acceptance where you just kind of think, like, I don't know, if it all ended tomorrow, I'd be all right. And that's, my mum and dad have spoken like that for years, right? We've lived a happy life. We've got happy kids. We've got happy grandchildren. We're really blessed. We're really grateful. We're really lucky. They see a lot of crap that a lot of their other friends and family have had to go through, right? They're very grateful that even though my mum's got a ton of illnesses, right, there's never been anything that's, I don't know. There has been some serious stuff, so I'll take that back. But they stayed positive and grateful and accepting, and I think just like literally decided, right, if it all ended tomorrow, would like die happy. And I said that, I think when it comes to like controlling our own emotions, I don't know if I need to get to the point of acceptance. And I hopefully that will come. But I can't get past the anger. And the anger is exhausting. And I know I'm not alone in this. I know there are angry parents because of broken education systems. I know there are angry partners because of the way that systems are bullying or harassing or making the workplace really difficult for people at work, for their partners, for their kids, for their parents, for their friends. I know we've got all of these broken systems, and I know that it's really easy to, well, at least the people are really lovely. But where do we find the energy from again to acknowledge the system is broken and we need to fix it? What do we do so that when a person is sat there thinking, is it, you know, looking at a piece of paper saying, well, let's do it for 3 weeks' time, where's the human side where somebody sits and says, do you know what, we've kept this poor guy waiting 3 weeks already. That'll be 6 weeks after a 5-month wait on something that was supposed to be a 2-week fast track. How does any of that make sense? And again, I know that my family are not alone in this. I've had messages, I've seen messages. I've got clients and course participants that are experiencing the same thing, not necessarily because of exactly the same thing, but because of caring issues or broken systems or education systems, or as I say, kind of workplace policies or any of that kind of stuff. And I've always tried to just believe the best, right? I've tried to maintain optimism and positivity and to think the best and to be grateful and accepting, just like my parents have been and are being. But I spent all of last year, I've spent 12 years really, 35 years in total, fighting a broken NHS, trying to be seen, trying to be heard, trying to be seen and heard as a person. Well, I had that at the beginning of this year with a family member that was taken into hospital. We've had it with my uncle and like wrong names being put above his bed, and like my uncle almost being wheeled down for an operation. Like they'd actually drawn on him to say where the surgery was going and then said, sorry, you can't have it today because of something else that we've just found. And I think there is becoming a point for all of us, isn't there, where that level of exhaustion, that level of moral injury, where all of these systems and values and processes are so broken that they absolutely rub up so much against our own values that we continue to put all of our energy into fighting to try and get things changed, fighting for things to be better, fighting for things to be more positive. And I know and I see and I'm feeling not a lot of us have got a lot of energy left to keep on fighting in the way that we've been fighting. And again, it's not that we are fighting for, I don't know, like the equivalent of billionaire status, right? We are fighting for basics, basic care, basic communication, basic common sense, basic emotional intelligence. And I think it's those of us with that level of values and compassion and empathy that are being worn down. And we can see on our social feeds, we can see in our neighbourhoods, we can see in our communities the impact of all of these people with apathy, because then everybody wants to start blaming everybody else. But we don't seem to be blaming any of the right people, but we're spreading a lot of hate and a lot of not very nice stuff to a lot of different people for a lot of different reasons. And yet we don't fix the systems. As I said, I don't have an answer for you. I'm frazzled from the fight. And it would have been quite easy, I suppose, wouldn't it, to record this and not even talk about this with you. But I do think we need to. I've said repeatedly, right, I know that I will never, ever get to burn out again. I know that. And yet, like, how much more fight have any of us got left in us? Whether we're fighting schools or education or governments or tax companies or employers or doctors or nurses or postmen, right? Whatever it might be, so many of us are just having to fight for the basics at the minute. And if we don't fight, we're not getting. And again, like, I'm not asking for like 24 karat gold plated service. I'm asking for basic function and basic services. I think it's that at the moment. Of course, I'm trying to bring it back to the burnout equation. I'm trying to bring it back to everything that I've done before, right? And again, burnout equation, right? Toxicity minus sense of self equals burnout. I'm continuing to do so much work on myself at the moment, and I am continuing still, I don't know how many years later, to remove and reduce as much toxicity as I can from my life. And there is still, like, there's a limit to that, right? Because I can remove the toxicity that I'm in control of, and yet I can't change or do anything about the toxicity that's on the outside. All I can continue to do is look at myself and my reactions and my feelings and my thoughts and my actions, and do everything that I possibly can to do everything that I possibly can. And I don't have the answers, but I suppose what I wanted to just get from today was that if you are like frazzled and exhausted from a constant fight, very often I think we can feel that we're alone. And so maybe me sharing this is a, like, I see you. I get it. And even with the best will in the world, and I get like 13 years in this space now, I'm running on empty. And I'm running on it because I cannot continue to fight for the basics. I can do everything else. You know, I do work that I love. My life is amazing. My life is amazing. Where I live, who I live with, my partner, my sons, my parents, my friends, my relationships, my work. Like, my life is as good as it gets, I suppose, right? And yet the stuff outside, I can't do it. I can't fix it. I can't do anything about it. And I get even more angry thinking that the anger that I'm feeling in trying to fight all the crap and actually get my dad seen and heard is then potentially taking away some of the time and the energy that I want to and need to and should be then focusing on my dad. So I'm still doing all that good stuff, right? My dad's first, speaking to my parents, we're having lovely conversations, we're having lovely time together, we're doing all of that. But the anger behind these broken systems is exhausting, and I know so many of you are fighting exactly the same thing. As I said, I don't have the answer for you. We can only do what we can do. We can only continue to try and solve the burnout equation as best we can, right? Reduce the toxicity, increase our sense of self. And if we do that, we can stop ourselves getting to burnout. Does that mean, though, that we don't feel frazzled, that we don't feel tired, that we don't feel exhausted, that we don't feel angry? No. I think all of that's understandable. So I think there's got to be some compassion in there, right? And genuine, like, if I didn't care, I wouldn't be fighting. If I wasn't a values-driven person, I wouldn't be fighting. If my parents didn't mean that much to me, I wouldn't be fighting. If the systems were working, I wouldn't be fighting, right? There's so many reasons that so many of us keep on fighting. And if all of that's got to go into the fight at the minute, we have to keep reducing the toxicity from elsewhere, and we've got to keep rebuilding that sense of self. We've got to be able to look ourselves in the mirror every day and know who we are and why we're doing it, and know why it's important to us and know why it matters. And we've all just got to keep on doing the best that we can. But does that mean that we're not frazzled and exhausted and tired and angry and frustrated and fed up and pissed off with broken systems? No. And I think we can say that and voice that. I think we need to say that and voice that. Because I do think we've got too much apathy out there with too many, well, it's just the way it is. It can't stay like this. It's doing too much harm. And as I said, I know it's not just healthcare. I know this is education. I know it's legal systems. I know it's government. I know it's taxes. I know it's schools. I know it's workplaces. I know we're being bloody surrounded by it. And that in itself is exhausting. So where we can, we've got to keep reducing the toxicity and rebuilding our sense of self. Because ultimately, I think that's the only thing that's going to get us through it. And that's all I've got for you today. So I'm going to say thank you for listening. I'm going to say keep taking care of you. Let's reduce the toxicity that we can reduce. Do we keep on fighting? I can't not fight. Or I was born a fighter. But maybe within that, fight for what we can and accept what we can't, I suppose, right? Keep taking care of yourselves. And we just got to know that we're not alone in any of this stuff. We've all just got to keep on keeping on, right? I'll be back with you again next week, hopefully with some more positive news. Maybe we can be a bit more upbeat and a bit more ranty next week instead of feeling a bit exhausted and a bit more beaten down. Go take care of you. Have an amazing week, and I'll be back with you again next Tuesday. Take care.